Hey, thanks for dropping by. Come on in.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
Thanks for joining us in the drawing room. I hope it's comfortable. Pull up a chair of some description and a beverage. I'll let your imagination run wild there. You can decide what kind of beverage it is. And as we sashay on towards the end of the program, we do so by looking at some very serious topics covered in a way that, well, is unusual. If I said to you, like a basic word association game, World War II and child sexual abuse, I got a feeling your immediate response wouldn't be children's literature. That's exactly what we have here. Two authors who have put together children's books on those respective topics. And whether or not you choose to believe it, they've both do a fantastic job of broaching some very difficult subject matter within the confines of that medium. Journalist and author Martin Flanagan is one of them. He's written a book called Archie's Letter, an Anzac Day story, which is particularly apposite, I guess, this week. And I think I'm just going to come out and say he's one of my favourite Australian writers and perhaps the reason that I'm even here. Congratulations on the book, Martin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Robert.
And Jonene Sanders has written a book called Some Secrets Should Never Be Kept. It's a children's book that looks at the issue of child sex abuse, and she joins us in the drawing room.
Good evening.
And I'm going to come out and say it's a great book. My wife thoroughly endorses it. We had it even before you were booked to come on the show.
Well,
so there you go.
Thank you so much.
I'll start with you, Jonene, if that's okay.
Sure.
You must have, when the idea was either pitched to you or you came up with the idea.
I came up with the idea.
Did you sit there and go, how am I meant to do this?
Well, there's a little bit of a story to this. Basically, I was on my children's school council and I brought up, I asked them, are we doing sexual abuse prevention education? And every time I'd bring it up, I was put to the sort of the bottom of the agenda. So one night I came home and I was so cross that every time I brought it up, I was just basically ignored. People looked to the ground, they looked away. I came home to my husband and I said, you know what? I'm going to write a book. And he said,
Jay.
He said, you can't do that. It's too hard a topic. I said, no, there's a way. I'm going to write a book. So that's when
Did you know what that way was?
Yeah, absolutely. Through story. I think, you know, story is such a wonderful medium to be able to talk about really difficult topics with children. We talk about grief. We talk about bullying. Why can't we talk about protecting themselves? So that's what I've done. And I've put it into a fictional setting as well.
When you first heard about this, Martin, did you think that it was an achievable task?
I would never have believed it could be done as well as Jay has done it. I was a witness in a sex abuse case, so I wasn't a complainant. I was a witness to an act. And I went through the trial procedure. I think I went to court three times, and I found that as an experience it was very difficult to talk about because it's so primal. Everyone comes to you with so many assumptions and presumptions, and they speak for you before you get a chance to speak. What I really like about Jay's book is that she has in a sense abstracted it. She's created this lovely little story, but in so doing she's isolated the key ingredient, which is the question of the child's knowledge and should the child hold the knowledge or release the knowledge to an adult. And so that's what I really like about her book. She has made an incredibly complex and politically charged issue. She's reduced it to its essence.
Actually, that's exactly the point, isn't it? Because there's nothing complex about the book.
No.
I mean,
no.
The child faces a dilemma.
And you know what? There's actually nothing complex about talking to children about sexual abuse prevention. Because what I like to call it is body safety, and I think that makes parents feel a lot more comfortable. So really, in a nutshell, the child should know that their body is their body and no one has the right to touch it, and if they do, they must keep on telling and keep on telling until someone believes them. And that is about it. There is nothing to do with sex or the act of sexual abuse, and it really is as simple as that.
So you're desexualizing sexual abuse.
Well, you know, talking to your children about sex is a conversation for another day.
Right.
Really? This is about giving children a voice, allowing them to speak up and say, stop, what you're doing is wrong. You can't touch me like that. Now, if you've got a confident child who knows their rights, who knows what the perpetrator is doing is wrong, that perpetrator is not going to go anywhere near that child.
But it's about knowing them, even knowing what the boundaries are.
Well, they do. They need to know the boundaries.
With my kids, you're constantly having to teach them what is private and what is not. Absolutely. Because otherwise they'll just run around nude the whole time.
And that's okay too.
Right, but if they've got an attitude that there's nothing private about their body, and then suddenly you're trying to tell them about sexual abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, how...
Well, you start from the beginning. Like when the child is probably about 2.5 years old, you start to name all the body parts as they're called, not give them little nicknames or whatever, because then children can actually say, if someone has touched them inappropriately, they can tell you where they've been touched.
Is, yeah.
And then you sort of work through it, and then you start talking about, you know, your body's your body and your private parts, are all those parts under your bathing suit, and no one can touch them. And then, you know, then I would... Because parents feel really uncomfortable doing this, and I was lucky because I didn't. Many, many years ago, I was an editor and I edited a book called Keeping Children Safe by Freda Briggs. And I thought then, I was only about 24, and I thought, gosh, when I have my children, I'm going to tell them all this stuff. So, of course, I had three daughters and they're very well informed from a young age.
I thought you were going to say this was the only way you could come to tell them was to write a book.
But I just thought parents feel uncomfortable, so... I put it into a story that's approachable.
Even this discussion makes your book sound more complex than it actually
that's
is.
That's true, Martin.
But, I think that's what the genius of your book is. I think you've brought it to such a simple, fine point that I think a child...
It is about as simple as a book gets.
Yes, it is.
When you read it, you're right. Yeah. It really strikes you.
Yeah, and the story that you've created around it is so... Well, it's sort of innocent in a way.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, you've got to look at the illustrations, though. I mean, Craig Smith, who did the illustrations, are fantastic. And, you know, I don't want to hog the airways here, but there was a bit of a story there. I mean, I approached a couple of illustrators, and Craig was the third one, and he said, oh, Jay, this topic makes me feel uncomfortable, but that's every reason why I should do it. Mm. And he said he has never enjoyed a project for a long time as much as this. And if you look at the illustrations, you'll see all these little sort of subtleties in
there. Now I'm going to have to open the book now.
Well, you will, but the children will see it too. You know, you can talk about these pages with your children. You can say, oh, why is that little boy feeling like that? And why is he, you know, why is his shoulders hunched? And he's put some beautiful little subtleties in there.
And now that you say that, I know exactly what you mean, just looking at some of the pictures. Not great radio, but I appreciate it. let's talk about your book, Martin, as well.
Let's
because,
do that.
I mean, you've taken on in some ways something that might be even more difficult because of the scale of the horror that we're talking about in World War II.
That could be the case. I suppose I came to it from a different direction to Jay, but I obviously knew the impact that it had on my father. I knew the impact that it had had on myself and my five siblings. And my father had the fortune to be with Weary Dunlop, and that's, to me, a great Australian story. And
it's an odd kind of fortune, though, given what he had to go through.
Well, but I think if you can go into the worst human experience and still see something good and come out of it, my father was in the middle of a war crime, but he believes to this day that most people are good. And I got brought up with that belief. And I always respect experience. And, well, he's
about as experienced as it gets.
Yeah. And so I thought, you know... if I could get this story through to another generation, then it's got another life.
So was that the motivation behind making it a kid's book? Because it was originally an adult's book.
Essentially, 11 up, I think Joe said. Yeah, I think that's about exactly right.
So it's an older group of kids you're aiming at than Jay's.
Yeah. 11, 12, 13. But one of the things I feel about literature generally or about our culture generally is that people are reading less and less.
Yeah.
And so if that gets through to adults, I mean, some adults don't want to read books any greater length than a few thousand words. So
how long is it, actually?
2,000 or 3,000 words.
Is that all?
Yeah.
It's an absolutely beautiful book. I read it this afternoon and it literally, I had tears. I did. And I really think it's the sort of book that we should have, you know, 11 going through the school curriculum. Yeah. I think you could really, all children need to read this book. It's a very important book and I think it's fabulous. So
Thank you. Thank you very much. I suppose the other thing was I wanted to write something that didn't glorify war. Mm. I mean, Anzac Day's huge now, but I don't think it's always reflective on the actual character of war.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, because and you publish a letter at the end of your book that your father wrote.
Yeah.
That was in turn published in newspapers.
Yeah.
And what comes through there is his deep gratitude to those who do turn up to the Anzac Day service.
No. Yeah.
But not a discussion of or an acknowledgement of the way that sometimes Anzac Day is married to a kind of nationalist fervor.
Yeah. Well, one of the important parts in that book for me personally was that when my father was in his 90s, he saw some elderly Japanese women from the Japanese peace movement. Mm. They were basically the first Japanese people he'd met since the war. But I was enormously proud of him for doing that. And that's another point of the book. This isn't a book which glorifies war or which shies away from the horror of war, though obviously there are details of that experience which aren't in the book, but which also tries to show through his life and what he did that we must never cease trying to find alternatives to war. That war, I mean, I respect pacifism, I don't think I am one, but I believe war should be the absolute last resort, whereas in recent history we've seen war used as a first resort.
Even as we talk a language even that is more pacifist. I mean, even as we talk more and more about how we're opposed to war, and we're people of peace, the facts on the ground seem different.
Well, we're engaging in wars that are of no tangible benefit to anyone. We're getting further and further drawn into wars, and I don't mean any disrespect to the Australian Defence Forces, but these wars we are getting embroiled in, I mean, does anyone actually believe they're winnable? I mean, what are we doing there?
Is that what's tricky about this then? Because you're telling a story from World War II.
Yep.
It's being released now.
Yep.
In the lead up to Anzac Day. Most people who are going to, I was going to say celebrate Anzac Day, remember, whatever the word is, will not do so with a direct memory of World War II.
Mm.
A lot of people, especially at the dawn service, especially in Gallipoli, will be people for whom the Anzac story is about Iraq and Afghanistan, essentially, and then the original story in Gallipoli. But but that'll be the experience of it.
Well, I think it's very important that we talk to young people much more about war, about, like, for me, there's an enormous difference between World War I and World War II in the character of it. And in the justness of it. And for me, when I hear young people on Anzac Day saying the Anzacs died to prevent Australia being invaded, well, in fact, the Anzacs died invading another country. So there's those, you know, if we want to talk about Australia defending itself from invasion, we should talk about the Kokoda Trail. I just think that we need to be a lot more reflective and a lot more... If Anzac Day is going to be that big, then we've got a broadened discussion about what it means.
You're in the drawing room with journalist and author Martin Flanagan, who's just released a children's book telling his father's World War II story. It's called Archie's Letter, an Anzac Day story. And also Janine Sanders, the author of a new book for children called Some Secrets Should Never Be Kept, which confronts the issue of child sex abuse and the fact that children should not keep secrets such as that. I want to ask both of you, as writers, were you intimidated by writing for kids? Because it's often described as a very difficult thing to do.
Well, you know, that's what I actually do as a day job. Mm. This book, I sort of actually did at night as a day job.
Oh, right, so this was just you in your spare time?
Well, yes, truly. I actually write for a new literacy series. And I write levelled readers that your kids probably end up coming home with. So, but I write under another name, Jay Dale. So, yeah, I'm quite used to writing for kids, so I feel quite comfortable in that. And I'm also comfortable matching text with illustration type and seeing that there is a really close match between the text and the illustration.
You start with the text, though, don't you?
You start with the text. But
so do you have something in mind when you're
doing it? Oh, yeah, you have pictures in your mind.
And so you're just looking for someone who can match it, really.
Yes, and it's like going into a lollipop shop. When you go on the net and you look at all the agencies and their illustrators, you go and you go, oh, yes, that's the one I want, or that's the one I want, so it's great.
For you, Mark, because your history is obviously writing newspapers and also for adults.
Yeah, well, to me, and I'd be interested in what Jay has to say about this, but to me the test is, you know, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. Mm. The test for me is what 11, 12, 13-year-old kids think of this book, and that's what I want to hear. And, like, I remember one 13-year-old kid read it and his parent asked him what he thought and he said it made me thoughtful.
Mm. Well, that's about as good as it gets.
That's about as good as it gets.
That's great. Right. Absolutely.
What sort of things do children say to you?
Well, philosophy is a great thing to do because when I was at a lovely primary school called The Patch, they used to teach philosophy there, and I don't know many schools that do, but what they do is they take a storybook, say, for example, like The Giving Tree. Do you know that story?
Mm-hmm. Or great book.
Great, beautiful
so
book.
So sad.
So sad, but so beautiful. Oh,
all the saddest books are for kids.
I know, and there's another one. Now, I've just got it here, actually. John Brown Rose and the Midnight Cat. So they take those kind of books, and I'm talking primary school here, so not the older kids, and they allow the children to talk about them. So they're learning a few things. They're actually learning the art of conversation and listening to other points of view. They're also, the teacher is just the facilitator, so the kids, the questions are asked to them and they answer, and it's fantastic. It's just a brilliant way, and children are learning a lot of empathy in this way, and they're learning, you know, they might talk about compassion, or they wait and they listen to the other one who's speaking, and it's great. So, yeah.
You're in the drawing room. Coming up next on RN is Big Ideas with Paul Barclay. That's true for everyone except those listening in the West who will get big ideas after 7 o'clock. On that show, since the High Court struck down the government's proposed Malaysian refugee swap, isn't that a vulgar phrase? The future of offshore processing of asylum seekers has been under a cloud. So what is the law as it applies to asylum seekers and refugees? What's the bigger picture in terms of the flow of displaced persons? And what can we learn from the experiences of refugees themselves? That's a special forum on Big Ideas tonight after the news, 7 p.m. if you are listening in the West. My guests in the drawing room tonight are, or I probably should say have been, given the news is about to come and whack us on the head, journalist and author Martin Flanagan. The book is called Archie's Letter, an Anzac Day story, written by Martin Flanagan. It's published by One Day Hill, which I think is your own publisher, isn't it, Martin?
So, I was a partner in it. I'm not anymore, but I still do a lot of work with it.
Okay, well, there you go. And Janine Saunders, the book is called Some Secrets Should Never Be Kept, looking at child sex abuse, and that's published by Upload Publishing. So
which
if you've
is
got
us.
Kids, that is you.
We actually couldn't find a publisher for this book. So we published it ourselves.
That's a really interesting story. We'll have to continue that conversation off air.
Okay.
This has been The Drawing Room. This has been RN Drive for today. I'll see you tomorrow.